Well, you know, it's funny because I came in here this morning and I saw Steve when wearing the same suit. Now, usually I kind of like, okay, well, I'm not going to wear that suit ever again because, you know, but I felt like, okay, well, maybe this is just the Spirit telling me, hey, you know what, you're imitating your evangelist, so that's a good thing, right? So, like, all right, hey, I'm going to take that. But I also, something else happened this morning that kind of helped me feel confirmed that what I have to share today is what God wants me to share today. And it was a communion message. It just so happens that's the same scripture I'm starting out with this morning. It says in John 15:4, remain in me as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. And this is the theme of our church this year, is to remain in the vine. So quickly and so often, we're going into our Christian life and we're going into our journey, and there's a lot of different roadblocks that we come across. And sometimes we take detours. I know I have. And those detours, sometimes it's by design, right? Like the accident the fire that took place on the highway, and you know you had first responders directing traffic to go around to get to your destination a different way. You know, that's not your fault. You didn't plan on that. You just wanted to get home. But sometimes these detours is of our own fault. Sometimes we purposely go this way, even though we know this route is the way home, but we purposely go that way. For whatever reason, you fill in the blank. And so this scripture, this is the basis, this is the premises of what I'm going to be talking to you about, because for the past 5 months, I've been on a journey that has been life-changing, not just in position in life, but spiritually, I've come to a new place that I have not been before. And bear with me, because as I was going through this journey, I was journalizing all this stuff because I didn't want to forget it. Because sometimes I get excited about change and boom, I'm running. And I forget, you know, 2-3 years later, I was here before. And I don't know how to respond. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to journalize this because I want to make sure I grab this because I know I'm going to need this. And so I've been charting this stuff and, you know, writing stuff in my journal, keeping notes. And now I'm getting a chance to share with everybody at once. And so it's like there's so much that I had a hard time fine-tuning it. And so up until last night, I prayed. I said, God, you know what? I'm just going to share me. And I'm gonna take off some of these layers, and I'm just gonna share my personal experience in hopes that it's gonna connect with one or two or many or all. And so the title of my lesson today is Pray, Believe, and Go. This has summed up the past 5 months for me. Pray, believe, and go. And the two stories that we're gonna look at, the two examples, is one from Daniel in the lion's den, and we're gonna look at Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego. And we're gonna see how these two stories, and literally how I was going through these phases. And this journey, I totally believe, I'm totally convinced now, it's not just for me. Like, I was a participant in this journey, but it wasn't just for me. So if you are here today, you were meant to hear this today. So do not take lightly your attendance this morning. We've been able to sing to our God. We've been able to fellowship with one another, encourage one another as we see each other. And now we're going to get a chance to hear God speak directly to you in your chair. So as you hear his voice, do not go the other way. Prayer. Prayer is the lifeline for anyone who called Jesus Lord. Prayer is the weapon that Satan fears the most, because he knows a person in prayer is a person who is connected to the source. His goal is to disconnect you from the source. However he chooses, he has many weapons, many arsenals. Lust, money, fame, fatigue, laziness, you fill in the blank. But he wants to stop the prayers. And so this portion of my life is where it begins. We're going to look in Daniel chapter 3 and verse 10. Now, just to kind of give you a quick background of what's happened, Daniel is a high-ranking official under the king's court. And even amongst the high-ranking officials, he gained favor above the rest. And so his co-workers, they didn't like that. They saw the writing on the wall. They saw the promotion coming. And it was like, it's not going to be me. And so they decided, you know what? We got to do something to trip this guy up. We got to slow his momentum down. Who do he think he is? He's not one of us. He's an outsider. And so they decided they're going to coerce the king to create this edict, this law, so that he would have to either choose to forfeit or die. And here's where we pick up. It says, now when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened toward Jerusalem. Three times a day, he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. Then these men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asking for God for help. Now, let's just back up for a minute. The first verse, Daniel learns some bad news is coming his way, and he says, you know what? I'm going to go home. I know, I feel like that's a job. I hear there's a new project coming, and I got to handle it. I want to go home. I got a little stomach ache, my throat hurt, the kid's sick, something. I want to get out of here. I want to go home. So I could relate to Daniel. See, because for me, what happened here, I was working with Walgreens as a logistics coordinator for about 2.5 years. And most of you guys know, because I shared the story with you so many times about the struggles I have at this job. And all the things that have been happening to me, the changing of schedules, the working on Sundays, you know, I was able to just suck it up. I mean, I'm like, you know what? I'm not happy with my situation. You know, I'm going to complain. I'm going to cry. I'm going to pray and be open. But hey, I got to do what I got to do. I got responsibilities, so I'm going to continue on. And so up until November of last year, right before Thanksgiving, we're about to leave to New York, I get an email from my regional manager, and he goes, we are going to set up a new policy, and it's going to require you to rotate your schedule every 3 months. My current schedule now is 5 a.m. to 2 p.m. That's gravy. I'm home before the kids. We get to play around, play basketball. I love it. Your new schedule will be 1 p.m. to 10 p.m. 1 p.m. to 10 p.m. I'm a married man who loved being with his wife. I'm a father of 2 young kids. I'm active in their life. We go to basketball practice. I take them to their enrichment. We do homework. I'm active in my church. I love my church. I serve. I want to be in a part of the community. That's my bad news. I want to go home. I want to go home. I just want to go. I want to drink some tea. I like green tea. You know, I'm trying to get down to just honey, but right now I'm on brown sugar. I'm a work in progress. 3 times a day, he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he'd done before. I didn't see this before. Daniel was a man of prayer prior to the bad news. Prior. He was a man who was connected to the source. What did he pray about during the good times? It says, giving thanks to his God. He didn't have hard times, so what he's going to pray about? Why he's going to pray about things that didn't happen yet? So he's praying about the great things God has done for him. He acknowledged his need for God on a daily basis. It says three times a day. But just like any situation, any person going through life, you're going to get the good and the bad. And so the bad news come, and what happens? They snuck up on him during his prayer times, you know, and it says he was praying and asking God for help. Are we asking God for help? Are we connected to the source that we're asking the very person who controls everything for help? Because I know I needed help, because you're telling me in 3 months from now, my whole life will change. This is going to impact everything that I am. In Colossians 4:2, it says, be devoted to prayer. Ephesians 6:18, and pray in the Spirit on all occasions with all kinds of prayers and requests. 1 Thessalonians 5:7, pray without ceasing. It's in there. God is constantly reminding us, hey, we need to be in prayer. Good time, bad time, and everything in between. Stay connected. Remain in the vine. Colossians 4:6, Epaphras, who is one of you and a servant of Christ Jesus, sends greetings. He's always wrestling in prayer for you, that you may stand firm in all the will of God, mature and fully assured. He's always in prayer, wrestling. Not even about himself. He's praying for you. Man, it's so encouraging when I walk in here on Wednesdays and Sundays, or if I'm on the phone and somebody says, hey, bro, I've been praying about that situation. What's going on? What's the update? That's encouraging. When somebody said they're going to pray for you, and then they see you and they say, hey, how is that specific thing you asked me to pray about? And that's encouraging. So many times I've come in here, and like I said, I bore myself to many of you guys, and you've done that for me. You've been this, wrestling in prayer for me. But we got to do the same thing for everybody else. We have to remain in the vine and stay connected. Jesus, in Matthew 26:36, then Jesus went with his disciples to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to them, sit here while I go over there and pray. He took Peter and the two sons of Zebedee along with him, and he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then he said to them, my soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me. Going a little further, he fell with his face to the ground and he prayed, my Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me. The author and perfecter of our faith remained in prayer. Shouldn't we? He felt the same things I felt and the same thing you felt. He was sorrowful. He felt troubled. He felt overwhelmed. I've spoken to many of you in here. Some of you are overwhelmed. Life is hitting you hard from left, right, uppercuts, over the top. Are you remaining in prayer? You're not walking out of prayer and saying, nah, prayer's not working. Let me try something else. You got to remain. Jesus, who is in heaven, is praying. Shouldn't we? Believe. This is the stage where questions start to seep in about my situation. Like Jesus, I want it out. Take this cup from me. Don't change me. I want out. I'm done. I've given this place everything I got, and they want blood. No, I refuse it. I'm done. I want out. Change my situation. Change it. What do you believe? Will your situation change? Will God rescue you? Is God able? These are the questions that start to seep in during my prayer time because I'm not seeing anything changing. So if I don't see anything changing, well, doubt gets a chance to drop some seeds in there. And during these prayer times, during the wrestling, some of these seeds started to sprout. And I started to question the very thing God has said and promised. Do you? Do you question? Are you uncertain of the promises you once believed and professed? These are questions I had to answer. And so this is where it starts to get real for me. In Daniel 6:15, it says, "Then the men went as a group to King Darius and said to him, 'Remember, your majesty, that according to the law of Medes and the Persians, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed.'" So now Daniel's in a situation, okay, I'm praying to you, right, God? I'm faithful. I'm three times a day. Everybody know who I am. They know I'm a faithful man to you. And so now you're bringing this edict on me. And by the way, let's stop for a minute. This edict wasn't for everybody. This was designed specifically for Daniel. Talk about a hard day at work. We complain that we don't get a parking spot. Man, they had a whole policy in place for him. Just for him. And so now, man, who we see all the time, says it's final. There is no hope for you. It's sealed. Your fate is written. There's no changing it. You're not going to... Look, the king, you cannot reverse the king's order. Remember, your majesty. So even if you think your manager will be able to, you know, massage the words for you, the VP said it is done. We are not changing this policy. So it got real for me. I started to believe, well, my situation won't change. It was put in place by the VP. There's nobody else above him other than the president. It's a done deal. So Daniel, I understood where Daniel was coming from. But what do you believe in your situation, in your life, as you sit in your chair right now, as you've been praying and haven't seen anything change yet? What do you believe? Is it final? Is it final? Because if it is, you might as well pack it up and go. But I know it's not. At least now I know. I'm assured of it, it's not. It says your faith can move mountains, and your doubt can create them. That's a powerful thing to say. Because we all know about the faith, the size of a mustard seed is all you need. And you get excited about that. But it says doubt can create them. In January, I attended the leadership workshop, which I wasn't planning on going because of the storms that was in my life. You know, Shayla and I, we were serving in the team ministry. And so we stepped down because we didn't think we would be able to, my schedule's going to change. That's what's going to happen. I'm not going to be effectively being able to serve in the teens. And so we stepped down. And that was hard. Like, I loved being in team ministry. I was converted as a teen. And so when we went over to the king's house, you know, they were thinking we were going to talk about the budget. And we sat down on the couch and, you know, I had to, it was eating me inside. I was like, we got to talk. We're going to have to step out of the ministry. And that was hard. Because when the kings got here, we meshed immediately. There was a real bond beyond the ministry that was built. And so tears fell. But they understood this storm is uncertain. And just wouldn't be fair to keep that pressure on you. You have two kids. You got a wife. It's a lot going on. Take the time you need to figure out what God is trying to do in your life. But during this time of doubt, when I went to this meeting, and I tell you, Steve said something, and it wasn't even like the meat of the class, but it was about him saying how your mind, what you perceive can become your reality. That was basically what it was. And so all the stuff I thought about, like doubt and how it kept feeding and feeding and feeding me, it will become my reality. If I keep believing that things won't change, it may not change because that's what I'm bringing to myself. In James 1:6-8, it says, But when you ask, you must believe and not doubt, because the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea, blown and tossed by the wind. That person should not expect to receive anything from the Lord. Such a person is double-minded and unstable in all they do. Continue to allow doubt reign in your prayer time, and this is who you become. You'll become unstable in all that you do. Not just the ones you want to do, but the things you didn't even think about. Daniel 6:17. So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you." A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the rings of the nobles, so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. What he feared happened. That's it. He didn't want to go into the lion's den. I know I don't want to go into a lion's den. Guess what? You're going in the lion's den. Bad things happen to good people. Good things happen to bad people. Reverse it. Doesn't matter. That's how life is. He was faithful. He was serving in his kingdom. He was a man who was known to be in prayer. He believed. He still got thrown in the lion's den. So what I'm saying is, you're in the lion's den. That sometimes that's what's going to happen. You're faithful. You're open. You're fighting against sin. You're serving. You're going in the lion's den. I'm not changing the situation. You're going in there. But you know what? When you're remaining in the vine, you're okay with being in the lion's den. You're okay with it. You've come to a point where you go, you know what, God? If I'm in the lion's den, I'm in the lion's den. What else do you got? You see just seeds, but I see the trees. This is the point where I started to stop looking at the negativity and all the stuff that I feared and doubted keep in my mind. I had D time with the Riles that same night that we had this meeting, and Chloe said something to me that was profound. She said, "Kinson, why do you put so much limitations on yourself?" And you know, I'm a guy who likes to chit-chat, so I had no answer for that, though. I couldn't say anything, because I realized for the past 2.5 years, the majority of my energy and thoughts was focused on this job that I didn't want to be at. I was focused on the lion's den versus seeing beyond the lion's den. And so I began to say, you know what? I'm changing the way I see things, starting with day one. And that's what I did. I got up every morning and I spent 35, 45 minutes. I got to be at work at 5. I got up at 3:30 in the morning, and I said, I'm going to spend time only focusing on the positive things. I'm not going to look at March. March is not here yet. When March comes, we'll deal with March. But right now, today, I'm only going to visualize what is it that I see God's calling me to do. And from that point, things began to change. Not my situation. Not my situation. I began to change. Colossians 3:2, set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. Mark 11:24, therefore I tell you, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe that you received it, and it will be yours. I applied scriptures like this. I sat down and I said, God, I don't see any scenario where I'm working 1 to 10. I just don't see it. I don't see how you want me to be away from my wife, who I love to spend time with, be away from my kids, be away from the church who I love and serve. I cannot see any scenario where that's my destiny. And so I stopped focusing on what I don't want, and I started focusing on what I do want. What I want is to be right here with you. What I want is to be with my kids. What I want is to be with my wife. That's what I want. Now it's time to go. Not go because my time is almost up, but go on this faith that you believe you have. Because sometimes we get caught up in be still and know I am God. And so I used to interpret as, well, I gotta sit still. God is gonna, he's gonna deliver me. He's gonna do it, so I'm gonna just sit still. I'm not gonna do anything. That's not what I've learned so far. I'm not telling you I've arrived. I just scratched the surface. But the surface I scratched tells me something different when it comes to being still. Being still means still the noise in your life so you can hear my voice. Still the noise. Put it to rest. And just listen to my voice. In Daniel 3, 16, 17, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, well, just real quick, these guys, just like Daniel, high officials in the kingdom, and just like anything else, when you're doing well, somebody don't like you, right? I mean, that's just how it is. You dress nice, I don't like the way you dress. Like, well, there's nothing wrong with that. So the king wanted them to bow to him every time they hear the song, the sounds and all this other stuff. And here's their response. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to him, "King Nebuchadnezzar, we don't need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it. And he will deliver us from your majesty's hand." You can hear some attitude in what they're saying. They're not like, well, you know, we serve a God who, you know, he'll help us out if we need it. There's an attitude about it. I believe this attitude came from the being connected to the vine. Understanding where they are before the Lord. And understanding that doesn't matter what man do, God is the final judge. And so they spoke with confidence to the king. Now, needless to say, you can go to your boss and tell him what you're not going to do. There's some consequences. You can go to your teacher and say you ain't going to do that homework. There's going to be some consequences. And just like in life, there was consequences. They got thrown in the furnace. You ain't going to talk to me like that. John 4:48, "Unless you people see signs and wonders," Jesus told them, "you will never believe." The royal official said, "Sir, come down before my child dies." "Go," Jesus replied, "your son will live." The man took Jesus at his word and departed. This royal official walked 25 miles through rough terrains to get to Jesus. For Jesus to tell him to go ahead and go back, "Your son is healed." I'm sure this man got some advice before he decided to go 25 miles. I'm sure he talked to his friends, his other royal officials. "Hey, what do you think about my son?" I'm sure he went to the surgeons and all the great minds to find out how they can help his son. He got advice. I know I did. You know, I was talking to you guys. I said, "Guys, man, my situation is looking tight right now. What do you think I should do? Should I quit? Should I? And you know, I was kind of hoping I was going to get, you know, my ears itched and hear what I wanted to hear. And a lot of folks are like, "Bruh, that's not a good idea. You don't want to just quit your job." All right? And let me say this about advice for a second. What this journey has taught me is I have to be real close to God to hear his voice. Because if you're not close to God and you start getting advice, you're going to hear a lot of voices. But you got to be able to filter the things you hear and align it with God's words. And so my journey has brought me to this point where I heard what people were saying. And they were good-hearted people who care about me, who cares about my family, who only want to see good. But I heard a different voice. I heard a different voice. After all these months of praying, I got to a point where it's time to go. I've prayed enough. I've read enough. I've heard from people already. And you can't, and it's scary because you're going to go against the grain now because everybody said no. And it's not a logical thing to do. But sometimes going in the lion's den is not logical. It's not. Sometimes you got to be able to go. One of the most toughest part of this journey is understanding my responsibilities as a husband and as a father. There was a time I was let go and I was unemployed for almost 2 years. That was some scary times. And so now full circle comes again. I'm at a job that is investing money in me. I just received a promotion, and they're going to promote me again to management. So money's going to look good. Situation, whatever it is, whatever you want to call it. But I didn't sense I need to stay any longer. I valued these other things more than this job. And I wanted the itchy ears to be itched, but the most important person I needed was my wife. I needed my best friend for over 20 years on this journey. And I say this because many of us are married, and we have situations in our lives, and we think that sometimes as men, we just gotta muscle through. But we can't forget our wives, our suitable helper. And so when I told my wife, you know, finally what I felt like God was telling me to say and do, she was excited about me quitting. Nah. No. She wasn't excited about that at all. You sure that's God that you're hearing? You know. And you know, I'll tell you this. My wife, she's right 9 out of 10 without the Spirit. Okay? So with the Spirit, this is serious territory I'm treading here. And I'm telling her, babe, I feel like God is telling me I need to leave. I need to step out on faith and go. And that was hard for her to really grab at first. Because, of course, you know, the security, the fears of the past and unemployment, that's a scary thing. It's real. Those are real, genuine concerns. That's not make-believe. That's not because you're not spiritual. That's why you feel this way. No, it's real. You got real bills to pay. They're not Monopoly. So I understood that I needed her. And when I, again, she wasn't with it at first, but two factors kicked in that really just solidified everything. And this quote kind of helped captures one of them. She says, "I stand behind you because I trust you lead the way." And he says, "I lead the way because I know you always have my back." I needed my wife on this journey. And although at first she wrestled with and struggled with the idea of the possibility of me not having anything, she went back to her relationship with God. And she started attacking the fears and the doubt through prayer and scripture so that she can be my suitable helper, my trusted advisor, my best friend, and we're arm in arm going into this unknown territory. And I tell you what, if she didn't come on board and things did work out, man, what would have missed? But that's not what happened. Daniel 3:28-30. Then Nebuchadnezzar said, "Praise be to God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and rescued his servants. They trusted in him and defied the king's command and were willing to give up their lives rather than serve and worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I decree that the people of any nation and language who say anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be cut into pieces and their houses be turned into piles of rubble, for no other god can save in this way." Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. So now, my wife is on board, I'm connected to the source, I totally believe my situation is going to change. But that's not what happened. Something greater happened. I changed. I found a new faith, greater than the size of a mustard seed. My faith had now become the faith of the centurion. His faith, Jesus was amazed, it says, that no one in Israel had faith such as him. My faith has grown to this point where I was willing to walk away and trust it was going to work out. I don't got the blueprint. I don't have the plans. It's going to work out, though. I turned in my 2 weeks' notice. 1 week left before it's all over. I send a text to many of you in here. If you guys know any recruiters that you've been using in the past, I'll send you my resume. Can you pass me their information? I send one text to a friend of mine who used to work for me at Walgreens. He gets the text. He goes, bro, I got a job for you. Call me. I'm at work. So I'm like, all right, well, lock out. I go outside. I went outside. I said, Winston, what's going on? His name is Winston. I said, what's up? He said, brother, I got your text. I got a job for you. Can you come and meet me this week? I said, I'll be there tomorrow. I go down to the job site, and what happens is this. Walgreens let his contract expire, and he moves on. He finds a job a couple of months later. He gets promoted to safety manager of the department. I get to his office. He goes, I got the text, and when I saw it, I knew God sent you my way. I have a position that I need someone who I can trust. And we've maintained friendship even though he was no longer with Walgreens. We still got together to hang out about marriage, life, everything. He goes, I have a job for you. What's the number that's going to bring you over here? Well, what's the job? What's the job? Because I don't want to get psyched out. What is it I got to do, you know? He goes, I have a position. I need a safety supervisor who will run our new hire process and take on some other projects for us to expand. And this job has low visibility, so that's why I need someone I can trust. That, because you're not going to be on my site, you're going to be in other places, and I just got to trust that what you're doing is what you're telling me and all that, and I know you can do this. Because when I was working for you, you trained, you did, you da-da-da, I know you can do this. What's the number that's going to bring you over? What's the schedule going to be like? Because I want to know, because that's why I'm leaving Walgreens. What's the schedule? He goes, well, in the beginning, it's going to be like 7 to 4 or 7 to 3:30 in the afternoon. But once we're done and you can move on, you won't even have to report to the site. You just work basically off site. And when you're done, you go home. What's the number that's going to bring you over? So I said, all right. So I channeled myself and said, all right, God, did a little Nehemiah prayer. Like, all right, God, I'm just going to throw something. I'll see what he's going to say. Okay, cool. I write the number down. I slide it over the table to him. I don't know why I did that, but I just slid it over to him. He looks at the number. That's doable. What else? You got to be kidding. I should have asked for more. No, but just like Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego, he saw my relationship with God. He saw the light. He saw me in prayer. He knew who I was before the Lord. That's what he saw. That's what King Nebuchadnezzar saw in these guys. And so he says, you know what? Not only am I going to throw this edict away, but anybody in this nation who speaks against your God, they're going to die. Oh, by the way, I'm going to promote you. So what I'm telling you is that you're sitting in this seat right now and you're thinking about whatever you're thinking about that's not going to change, or you're uncertain, or maybe you haven't even journeyed yet. Maybe you even haven't started praying yet. But all this to tell you that God is not absent. He's not absent. You got to remain in the vine. You need to get back on that route that's bringing you back to the source. Amen.